time for hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest in this hour is Pastor Ken Wagner. He is pastor at St. Peter Lutheran Church in Macomb, Michigan. Good morning, Pastor.
Hello, Chuck. Good to be with you, friend.
How's everything?
We are doing good. No snow today.
Hard winter in Michigan this year? Or?
Yes, but the sun is shining today.
So you can thank God for that.
Celebrate. You are right about that.
If it's all right with you, I would like to kind of pick up our conversation from our first hour here. I don't know if you had a chance to hear that. Probably not, I guess. But
no, sir. I was actually I was in a counseling appointment.
We are in our first hour of the Bible study. We are in the book of Acts, and today we dealt with the middle section of Acts chapter 2, which picks up with Peter's sermon on Pentecost, and we just dealt with the middle of it. And my question for you is this. The text of Peter's sermon is, I would say, provocative at least, maybe offensive at best. He says in verse 29, Peter does, "Brothers, I may say to you with confidence about the patriarch David that he both died and was buried, and his tomb is with us to this day, being therefore a prophet, and knowing that God had sworn with an oath to him that he would set one of his descendants on his throne, he foresaw and spoke about the resurrection of the Christ, that he was not abandoned to Hades, nor did his flesh see corruption. This Jesus God raised up, and of that we are all witnesses." This Christ that he is talking about here, he accuses his hearers of murdering.
Putting to death.
Putting to death.
Mm-hmm.
And as he goes through his sermon, which is a pretty short sermon compared to most of the Lutheran sermons that I've heard, the outcome in verse 37 is, "Now when they heard this, they were cut to the heart and said to Peter and the rest of the apostles, 'Brothers, what shall we do?'" Now I'm thinking that if I were a preacher, if I were Ken Wagner, that would be the kind of outcome I'd like to have at the end of my sermon. But it's clear that part of the dynamic of Peter's preaching included a pretty severe presentation of, I guess, what we call the law.
Mm-hmm.
So in my conversation with Pastor Stephen Tice, I brought up the fact that Peter was a fisherman, a professional, commercial fisherman, good at it, earned his living from it, and Jesus said to him, "I'm going to make you a fisher of men." I asked Pastor Tice if Peter had let down his net here in Acts chapter 2. That brought a smile on the face of Pastor Tice and a twinkle in the eye that listeners couldn't hear, but I could tell that that question resonated with him, and he said that he did.
Yeah.
So now I hope I've got you caught up to ask this question. And that is, when we let down our nets in whatever environment we are in, does that proclamation, by definition, have to include some kind of provocative component, some kind of message that cuts to the heart? Can you let down your net and leave that part out?
Well, you couldn't, first of all, you couldn't see the twinkle in my eye and the smile on my face, because I thought that's where you were going. What a great analogy all the way around. But let me answer the question directly, and I think the answer is yes. Yes, it has to be provocative, or maybe this is not the best word, but it certainly has to be confrontational, earth-shaking of the attitudes and the beliefs that we think we cherish the most. Something along those lines happens, and you know, you can pick up with the imagery, if I can put it like this. You know, when that net goes down and sweeps up the fish, you know, here's this school of fish swimming along perfectly happy and whatever, and then this net comes along and drags them out of their comfortable little world to bring them face to face with the reality of the fisherman, and ultimately with the creator of the fish, if I can keep going on that for a moment. So the bottom line on that is, yeah, I think the message, both law and gospel, takes us, it confronts us, it takes us to a place where maybe 5 minutes before we hadn't been, or 2 days before we hadn't been, or maybe for our entire life we hadn't been there, we hadn't understood it, and then comes this word from God, which is both law and gospel, and it shakes up our certainty, it shakes up our complacency, whatever God the Spirit has to do to get our attention so that the message comes through. And this is perfect. We were actually, quite honestly, Chuck, we were talking about this in confirmation this morning. I started a study, you might say. I wanted to go through the book of Acts.
You mean you explained this to eighth graders?
I did. I tried.
Oh, well,
my
then
best.
I should be able to understand it. There's hope.
No, but I was going to try to get through at least half the book of Acts, but they start asking questions about Judas and how did Judas die and all, you know. So we only got up to basically chapter 3. But we did talk about this one. Peter gives this speech where, and we were talking about this, or I was talking about it. I don't know if they're listening to me. Peter gives this speech, this sermon that changes their world. These listeners here, probably religious leaders, probably just ordinary people, but cut to the heart. Is right. It's life changing. There's no doubt about it. But I like the way you said it. Yes, there has to be some kind of provocation, challenge. But that's how God works, to change our hearts.
Well, that gives us a serious problem here, because if there's anything that is not permitted in today's society, it's provocation.
Right.
If you're going to communicate the way Peter did here, so as to say to his hearers, this Jesus of Nazareth, this one we're calling the Christ, you murdered him. You killed him. You people. Now, it doesn't get much more provocative than that. And most of the time when you're sharing the law with somebody, it doesn't have to be maybe that severe. But we are in a period of time where provocation gives offense. Offense connotes intolerance. Intolerance is a violation, and you're discredited, and we're done. We're talking. So how are you going to communicate the law and still have somebody to talk to before, you know, while you're trying to get to the gospel?
Well, thank God there are still faithful men and women and children who come regularly to worship. And I'm going to digress for just a moment, if you'll allow me. I was a preacher yesterday for Ash Wednesday. We're doing a series on 6 days from, if you can picture this, from Palm Sunday to Good Friday. Those were 6 days. Jesus had 6 days to live from the time he entered Jerusalem on Palm Sunday in the triumph there. I'm trying to bring about an understanding, a deeper understanding and appreciation for what the Lord's priorities were. Now, one of those days, Jesus talks about, with the Pharisees, it says, loving the Lord your God. What's the greatest commandment? It's in Matthew 22 for our listeners. And he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart. Well, of course, now, I hope I don't sound self-serving, but I did try to craft, especially for Ash Wednesday, what we would call a law gospel sermon. Well, if the key, as Jesus says, the greatest commandment is to love the Lord our God with all our heart and mind and soul and strength. Well, what's my big problem here, Chuck? You know what it is. I don't, do I?
No.
Not always. I mean, I might have a half-hearted love.
Never.
For God.
Let's be honest. Now, here I go. See, I'm going to be offensive. We don't ever, ever love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul,
never,
strength, and mind for 1 second.
Exactly. I agree with that. So these...
Can we continue talking, or did
yes, I
hurt your feelings?
Yes, I think we do.
Feelings?
We can. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
But, and I hope I I continued to talk, preach, if I may say,
yeah,
to the people at St. Peter. Well, and I mean that was the law. Yeah, let's honestly examine our lives. Do we love the Lord? Oh my goodness, no. We've got clutter all over the places. We've got distractions that take us away from our, you know, even kind of the minimum love of God. So the law confronts. The law confronts us with our failure. And then of course, I mean that's why Jesus was teaching, but that's why Jesus had only 6 days to live. To bring me into a new relationship, to forgive my failures. Well, of course, you see the beautiful dialectic there, the contrast between the law and the gospel.
Dialectic.
But you know what? Well, yeah, in the sense of just you know, if we think that we're only going to stick with the law and be saved, no, it ain't going to work. There's no way that we're going to stand before God and say, "Yes, Lord, I loved you with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my strength," and God will kind of very lovingly, like a father, "What about this? What about that?" Well, no. I mean, we can't stand in the presence of God. But when we come to our Father and say, "Forgive me, Father. Forgive me for not loving you. Forgive me for my lack of love." That's what I was talking about. Our lack of love. "Forgive me for Jesus' sake, because of your Son. Not what I have done, but what he has done for me." And then we have a way to stand in the presence of our Father. And anyway, all I'm trying to say is these dear people at St. Peter, they came to worship the Lord, they came to hear his word, and they heard that, and afterward a couple people said, thank you for sharing that, thanks for the word, things like that. And not that it builds me up, but it does convey that at least the message is getting out there and getting through. But if I would have said, Chuck, if I would have said, "You know what, folks, you are all okay with God. You're okay with God. Why don't we just wrap it up and we're going to go to our homes and watch the Olympics for the rest of the night. You're okay with God. Just go on happy." You know, I haven't confronted. I haven't challenged. I haven't let God's word do its work. In fact, I've kind of put my own way forward. That's why we have to be provocative. Now, talking to, and I'll stop at this point, talking to another environment that says, "You know, I am pretty good with God, and God's pretty good with me." Boy, then you have to really challenge them very carefully. You have to choose your words carefully as well.
Or just not say anything at all, which is what most of us elect to do.
Oh, well, that's true, but that's not an option for us, is it really? Because that's what we're called to do, put down the net. Put down the net, right? Now, do I do it? Of course, I fail many, many times, but I still have to come back to what does the Lord call me to do?
Well, now, and here's the here's sort of the point of confusion, I think. You see what you think of my diagnosis. There, we've had these kinds of conversations on the Bible study here before. And you just said, and you're right, that just excusing yourself from the moment is not an option. You need to confess. You need to share your witness with the person with whom you're speaking. But we have also said that we have to, in order to give a good witness, share what God has to say in his law, mm-hmm. which we've admitted may be provocative, even offensive. We may be judged intolerant. It's usually when you get to that moment where you're not allowed to remove yourself from the situation and you're not allowed to omit the part that's going to make the trouble that we get this kind of coded response from you guys that sounds something like this: "Well then, Chuck, that's why we speak the truth in love." And the rest of us go, okay. Well, what does that mean?
Because
for me, speaking the truth in love means leaving out the offensive part and just going straight to Jesus, just going straight to the gospel. But I just heard you say, no, we can't do that. So can you explain to me how one delivers the provocation and the offense of the law in love?
In love? Well, perhaps it really does first begin with the relationship, or maybe the context, if I could put it that way. If it's a bigger context, and I'm going to come back to an analogy or another illustration that I had, but if the context is where you don't really have a relationship with these people, it does. Even the tone of your voice sometimes is critical, and it, when you speak, you truly do have to convey concern.
That's why we have professionals like you, Pastor Wagner. You have the training. Boy, if it comes down to the tone of my voice, I might be a train wreck. So you know what? It's wise for me to excuse myself from that situation and just say, you know, you ought to talk to Pastor Wagner.
Well, not you. You don't have to do that because I've heard you and I know you, friend. But maybe for some of us, it will require a little bit of, can I say, instruction in the Word and formation in the art of sharing the faith. That's perfectly fine in my book. Let's help people to learn how to share the faith in both a faithful, but I like the word winsome way. And that's not just a term, but in a way that people will listen. Now, I think Peter does that. You know, let's go back to that. He makes a connection with the crowd right there. Friends, we're not drunk, but I am telling you, this is what God, the Spirit, is doing in our lives. And you know, it was prophesied by Joel. And then there are some provocative parts there too, but Peter also has a context where he can speak this word to people. Well, let me share an example.
Before you do that, can you make a note there? Don't forget your example. But Al's been holding on here for about 5 minutes, so I want to get him here on the radio. 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Al. You're on the Bible study.
Morning, Chuck. Morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to call back in on that the conversation just had back a little bit about love the Lord God with all our heart and all our mind and all our soul. And for many years, I took that as something as a statement of law because I had a total misunderstanding really of what love is. And for other people there too, that I'm sure there's a bunch of them out there. When God talks, I mean, God's love is so different than ours. When we tend to analyze what kind of love, and for the last 7-8 years, the way it was explained to me was that our love for God is along the lines of agape love, which just really, I could never wrap my hands around that. But I was explained to me that actual true love, as God knows love, God knows we're not going to love him because of we're not going to love him with all our heart, soul, and mind because of our sinful flesh.
Right.
The love that God is looking for from us is in doing his will. If it's going to church, if it's sharing the gospel with a friend, if it's anything that pertains to God's will, that's the love that God is talking about. Not the superficial love that we just relate to as humans of affection and, just being close to one another. It's the perfect love of doing God's will. That is what we do literally on a daily basis. We don't necessarily know it, but it's in being a Christian, that's the love that God is looking for. Thanks.
Thanks for the call.
Hey, well, Thank you, Al. I appreciate that very much. You're onto something there, and what I'm not going to give you my whole sermon from yesterday. Thank God for that. But the reality is that when God calls us to love him, it is really ultimately rooted in faith, to trust him, to trust that his word is true, and to trust that he has brought us into this saving relationship through Christ. And it doesn't matter if it's the Old Testament people of God, because that invitation, that command to love the Lord God with all our heart, soul, and strength and mind, that comes after God, for example, had rescued this people. So they don't have any claim on God. So it begins in faith, our attitude of faith, our posture of faith, trust in his word, and then flows out, as you pointed out correctly there, flows out into all these various facets of our life. But the second dimension, and this is where I get to go next week, that's the first and greatest commandment, but the second commandment is to love our neighbor. So that faith and love toward God, and I think this is kind of where you were going, Al, it flows out into sharing the love of Christ with the people around us in our daily vocation, in our calling, in our witness, in our, all those things, those are powerful things. God doesn't need those. I mean, you'll agree with that. God doesn't need our good works, but as we like to say, the people around us sure do. Our neighbors need them, and that's the second part. So I think it's a beautiful tandem, and I really appreciate what you said. Thank you.
Well, building, all right, did you want to give your example?
Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Just in terms of, and I had to cancel on you earlier this month because I went down for, I'm going to provoke you here now. I'm going to probably be provocative here.
Better watch out. I got a right hook, buddy.
Okay, I would never want to get in front of that.
Yeah.
I went down to a prison, to a state prison in Michigan. It was an all-day trip for me to visit someone. I won't, of course, use any names. He was in there for something that we would find reprehensible, absolutely reprehensible. I walk into, and that's an experience all its own. I walk into the waiting room, you know, the area that we can meet and talk,
right,
thinking law and gospel. Chuck, I threw the law out the window. I threw the law out the window. You know why?
I do not.
He was crushed. He started crying that one of his pastors came down. He apologized. He said, I'm so sorry to God. I feel so badly. I talk to God and I ask God for forgiveness every single day. He went on. I just listened. Now, what am I supposed to do? Come back and beat him up some more with the law?
Well, that does tend to suggest, does it not, that the law has already done its work?
It's already been there. Exactly right, in the Spirit of God. So what I got to do for that time is to share good news and forgiveness and to pray. Now, see, that's the beauty. We know that the Spirit of God is working. And sometimes we have to be sensitive to those. And maybe that's what I was trying to get at. We have to be sensitive to the context. But where, you know, if it had been quite different, where he said, what are you doing here? I think my conversation would have gone very differently. But to be honest with you, it was very, very painful, very emotional. And he just appreciated hearing a word of forgiveness and hope. That was the first time he had had a visitor.
Well, I got my eye on the clock here. I'm hesitant to start up another conversation and have to interrupt you. But do you have a here's how I do it kind of a thing for speaking the truth in love and delivering that law? You know, most people are not necessarily dug in. They're not.
Right.
You don't know. You don't know if the law's done its work or not. You just got to begin talking about being a sinner. Do you have a icebreaker for that?
Yes, I think I do. Want to talk about it afterwards?
Okay. Yeah. And then we got to talk about the Salvation Army, too. That's coming on the other side of the break here. The
okay.
Salvation Army, the government's going to monitor the Salvation Army. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. If you'd like to come on board here with our Ask the Pastor Bible study, Pastor Ken Wagner with us from St. Peter Lutheran Church in Macomb, Michigan. We'll be right back.
To find you and kill you, Julius! What is it?
Isabel!
What was in the newspaper?
14 enemies of the state executed. The Baron Jacques Darrow.
Don't miss the next Lamplighter Theater. Here on this station.
Saturday mornings at 11 on KFUO Radio.
Spring may be right around the corner, but flu season is still in full swing. It's not too late to protect yourself and your family from the H1N1 flu. Get a flu shot and make sure your family does too. It's now available to everyone, and it's free from your local public health department. It's your turn to get vaccinated. Call 877-FLU-4141. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 877-358-4141.
A message from the Department of Health and Senior Services, supported by a grant from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Never before has a popular president fallen so far in opinion polls in such a short time. Mr. Obama has been in office just over a year, and the polling numbers look abysmal. The most recent is from registered voters who expressed an opinion of the president as a person. More disapprove than approve. What's striking is independents disapprove almost 2-1. One political pundit observed Americans aren't just disappointed, they're starting to not like it. It'll only get worse as most oppose government health care that includes abortion on demand. I recently shared with subscribers of my email alert the many things Mr. Obama has done to further abortion. If you missed it, visit lifeissues.org and click on today's broadcast link.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Homecoming. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The husband of one of the 8 Americans who was released yesterday from a Haitian prison says their families have had a rough couple of weeks.
It's been difficult, but at the same time, God has lifted us up and kept us encouraged and helped us through this.
Eric Thompson spoke with reporters in Meridian, Idaho, as Carla Thompson and her fellow Baptist missionaries prepared to fly back to the United States. The Thompsons' pastor, the Reverend Clint Henry, says his congregation at Central Valley Baptist Church will continue to pray for the release of Laura Silsby and Carissa Coulter, who await further questioning by the Haitian judge who freed the others.
We are going to continue to pray and work toward their release, believing that that will come soon as well.
The missionaries were accused of child kidnapping for trying to take 33 Haitian children to the Dominican Republic without proper documents after last month's earthquake. I'm Steve Coleman.
If I ask most Christians, what did Jesus do for you? Most of them will say, Jesus died for me. But it's also true, Jesus lived for me. And for you. Jesus lived for me by consistently and faithfully and regularly and always saying no to Satan's sly temptations.
Pastor Ken Klaus, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
David Sherwin and the 60-voice-strong National Lutheran Choir's Touring Hymn Festival, To Everything There Is a Season, visits Concordia Seminary's Chapel of Timothy and Titus on Friday, March 12th. For more information about the hymn festival, visit the National Lutheran Choir's website, nlca.com.
Listen to the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. I'm Chuck Rathert. Phone numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We began our conversation in the previous half hour by looking at Peter's rather provocative and challenging sermon delivered in Acts chapter 2, some of the text of which we dealt with in our first hour. And our original question was, can you let down your net? Can you be a fisher of men without that provocative or, I suppose we could say, law-driven component? So we have reached this question here. If the law needs to be delivered, and I think most times it does, if the law needs to be delivered, if we're not excused from delivering it, and we don't want to be heavy-handed and just brutalizing people, How do we do that? We call that speaking the truth in love. How do we do that? It seems to me that if we're good at it, we would have some kind of icebreaker sentence or paragraph that would get us started so that we could continue. Pastor Wagner seems to think that he might have that for us. Pastor?
Well, it is an art of discernment, but let me share two quick things. One is I really do appreciate the opportunity to ask questions, and usually in my role, I have at least the context, as I was talking about before, the context of being a pastor. I get to ask a couple of thoughtful questions, and then you can go on from there. So if I can put it, and I'll try to illustrate it in just a minute. The second, underneath the big theme of questions, the second twofold, I think it's a framework for me, really revolves around Genesis chapters 1 to 3. All pastors like to say, well, you can find everything in Genesis chapter 1 to 3, but what do you feel about creation, the fact that that we are creations of God? And the second one is, what do you think about the fall? So creation and fall, the idea that we are created by the Lord of the universe, and the fact that we are separated from him, alienated, those two twin themes, if I could put it, they kind of guide me in terms of asking a question. And let me give you an example. I talked with a gentleman who came to our church. I met with him on Tuesday morning. He came to our church about a month ago, and we had a nice chat. The key was about a fall. He is a police officer. And he had a different background, and had drifted away from the church for quite a long time. But he's a police officer now, and he's on disability because of an accident that had happened during his on his watch, so to speak. Well, we kind of got into it through the fall in terms of, I said, and I'll even tell you his name. His name is Chris. Chris, what did you see about people when you were on the job? And then, of course, he's going to say, oh my goodness, I have seen some of the worst. Well, that was a beautiful opportunity. And he talked for a little while, and I said, it really does come take us right back to Genesis, the early part of Genesis, what God says in terms of our condition before, like Adam and Eve, we're fallen. And then, of course, that opens the door for conversation, and we ultimately, and they would like to join our church. I sound a little self-serving there, but they're going to take our membership course in the summer. But you know, it was kind of neat. You just look for those opportunities, and maybe you say, well, sure, he's in your office, and he knows you're the pastor, and so on. He's going to tell you what he thinks you. No, I wasn't like that. It was more of just a dialogue. You can learn where people are, and then kind of plug in, if I can say it like that, plug in with the gospel. So, and we had a chance to talk, and he's really quite interested. I gave him. I'll tell you what I did. I invited him just first of all, and I know this may strike you as a little odd. I said, why don't you? I showed him a copy of C.S. Lewis. Mere Christianity. I said, have you ever read this book? No. He knew the name from the Chronicles of Narnia. I said, why don't you start here? Why don't you start here? And I promised to walk with him down the road. Now, well, that's a start. That's a start. So all I'm trying to say is, if you ask some questions, maybe about what are they doing? What does he do, or what kind of line of work does the person do, or whatever, then you can open it up to what I think is a real healthy dialogue. Now, I didn't have to, in that case, Chuck, I didn't have to beat him up with the law, because he fully recognized that we are sinners. Now, would he have articulated that, if he had just been sitting in the lobby of a movie house or whatever? I don't know. But at least I had the opportunity to, can I say, bring it out of him, draw it out of him. I thought that was cool. It was a good morning for me.
It's a good and helpful story.
Yeah.
All right, here's a story from New York today. Got my attention, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm stroking my freshly shaved chin this morning, thinking to myself, do I see a double standard here? Could that possibly be true? The city of New York and state agencies have agreed to monitor the Salvation Army to ensure that the Christian charity does not force recipients of its government-funded social services to engage in religious activities. The New York Civil Liberties Union announced the settlement agreement on Wednesday. It stems from a lawsuit filed in 2004 on behalf of a group of current and former Salvation Army employees of its government-funded social services programs. The plaintiffs allege they were forced to identify their church affiliation and frequency of their church attendance and to sign an endorsement of the Salvation Army's mission to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. In 2005, a federal judge dismissed their claim of religious discrimination. So now a municipality, a big one, the city of New York, and a variety of state agencies are going to monitor the Salvation Army to make sure. Now, I got to think about this for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
The Salvation Army. Let's think about that name here for a second. What is it that they're likely going to be saying when they talk?
S-A-L. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. But the government is involved now because there's government funding that's involved. And so they, you know, they interact with people. And now the government is going to work to ensure that the Salvation Army is not forcing anybody into their mindset. Then I think about this group Acorn. Have you ever heard of the group Acorn, Pastor?
Yes, sir, I have.
They actually receive federal funds, too. They receive government money.
Yes.
And there seems to be some evidence that Acorn has been involved in voter fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, quite a bit of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the evidence of the people who used the hidden camera and went in and sort of videotaped some of these people who were giving some appropriate advice, trying to be generous here.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to be monitoring them. It doesn't seem that anybody's monitoring what happens with Acorn. And when some of this became known, the federal government pulled its funding. It was at least serious enough to get people in the government to think that way. And then right away we had people saying, no, you got to put that funding back. Now, do you see a double standard here?
Absolutely, I do. If I can put it in my own words here, the Salvation Army, the leadership, is almost under scrutiny right now, and they will be monitored so that they actually do not try to carry out their mission through their personnel, right? Through the people who are either working for them.
Yeah, they do social services. The way the story is written here, the implication, as I read it, is that the Salvation Army goes out and performs social services, whatever that is. That probably means giving food to people, providing shelter to people. But if you provide shelter to somebody, you better not tell them about Jesus.
Right.
Just because they're, you know, just because you've got some food and you're offering it to them, you better don't tell them about Jesus. Don't force your religion on them while you're doing social services, because some of the money that supports your social services is coming from the government.
But was this lawsuit meant to? And I have a point to this. Was it from former employees saying that?
Well, now that's a good question. Let me see if I can clarify this, because we actually have two things going on here.
Okay.
As the story says, the action that the city of New York and New York state agencies have agreed to take, that is to monitor the Salvation Army, stems from a lawsuit filed in 2004. The story says that this lawsuit in 2004 was filed on behalf of a group of current and former Salvation Army employees.
Mm-hmm.
So the
who do not apparently agree with the mission of the Salvation Army.
That
right?
That is correct. Okay. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit alleged that they were forced to identify their church affiliation. So I guess if you came and said, I want to work for the Salvation Army, they would say, well, where do you go to church? And if you said the Buddhist church, maybe that was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
How often do you attend church? We need you to endorse the Salvation Army's mission to preach the gospel to Jesus Christ. So they filed a lawsuit.
Wow.
And that lawsuit in 2005 dismissed that claim of religious discrimination. So they, according to the story, if I read this correctly, they lost. However, stemming from that lawsuit, comes monitoring by the city of New York and the state of New York.
And the state of New York, right.
Not about employees, but about recipients of the social services.
Okay. I see. Boy, that is a little complex. My first thought was, and I don't know if you'll agree with me, is that the Salvation Army has its mission, and I realize they are supported, for example, by United Way funds. But if you choose to work for the Salvation Army, that's sort of common standard knowledge, isn't it, that you embrace the mission of whatever company or corporation you're working for. I mean, you're not working against that. But I thought that was ironic and sort of one of those weird things. But now, so the next part is that the Salvation Army is going to be monitored by the city and the state so that they don't really impose their, quote, religious views on the people that they serve.
I wonder, what do you think that looks like? Well, for example, I don't know much about St. Peter Lutheran Church in Macomb, Michigan. But let's just suppose for a moment that you have a food and clothing ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Pastor David Marth down here at Trinity in Soulard has quite an active ministry in that area. So you have people coming from your neighborhood there in Macomb, and you're feeding them.
Yes.
And now I don't know how to monitor somebody unless somebody from the state with a badge or a card comes in to see if you're talking to those people. You give a bowl of soup to somebody, and if Pastor Wagner says, here's a bowl of soup in the name of Jesus, I guess you're going to jail, maybe. I don't know. Is that what that means?
Or maybe even something as innocuous as, God bless you today, huh? Hmm?
We can't have that.
You can't have that, huh? Well, actually, we do exactly what you just described. We do have a food pantry, and I'm on for next Friday. And I'll be the guy.
You'll be looking over your shoulder now. You're in Michigan.
In Michigan.
So you don't have to worry yet.
It hasn't come that far yet. You're exactly right. It hasn't come west here. But I'll tell you what I would continue to do it. I know all the people who actually do this will be members of our church. It's a conflict. It's an absolute, the word I have to use is, it's just an incongruity. I can't imagine doing my job. I can't imagine doing that without being faithful to what I hold at the core. And we will do that. These people will come in. And I'm one of the people who goes around and we take prayer requests and things. I guess that would all be at it. In New York, is that right?
Yeah.
No prayer requests. Don't pray. I prayed with people in our food pantry distribution. I prayed with them. Not to brag, but I'm just telling. I prayed with them, but all those kinds of things go out the window.
Well, let's sum this up here a little bit. I don't know when you're working, if you're distributing clothes or if you're giving people hot meals that come to your church or your basement or whatever. I know a lot of churches will go to where the need is. And
right.
So maybe people aren't coming right to their church building, but they are going to a shelter or somewhere where they can get some food, clothing, or maybe a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're doing that, you said you're going to do that, next Friday?
Yes, sir.
Your turn to do that?
Yes, it is.
Do you, let's forget about the government for a moment.
Okay.
Let's forget about the state of New York. Do you say to yourself, now, I can't wear my religion on my sleeve here. I can't make these people feel like, ha-ha, now that we talked you into having a bowl of soup, we're going to bombard you with the gospel. Do you exercise some restraint in that situation anyway because that situation calls for it? Or are you more likely to say, that's why we're running this soup kitchen? So when people come in here, we can tell them about Jesus. Which direction do you go?
To the latter there. I mean, that's why we do this. That's exactly why we do this.
That's why we do it.
That's why we do it.
I got a feeling that's why the Salvation Army does it.
I agree.
To preach the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And, I mean, but that's all part of the, as we were talking about the response, the joyful response of the believer. I don't have to give to God. God doesn't need my offerings, but I'll tell you what, there are a lot of people up here who do. And I want, in faith toward God and in love toward my neighbor,
so
I want to be able to do that.
So you give this person who's kind of down on his luck, and you know, a really nice big hot bowl of chicken noodle soup, and they're grateful to get it. And then what do? Sit down across the table and say, you know, while you're here, let me tell you about my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Do you do that?
Not for everybody. Not for everybody, honestly, but for some people, yes. Some people we can have and what's the ironic part about this is, of course, is I have brought that up, and they know me as Pastor Ken. I wear my badge, and they will say something like, "Thank you."
You got a badge?
Yes, I do. I have to wear my badge.
Oh,
identification?
Yeah,
no, it's not like a police badge.
I thought you were CSI or something.
but the ironic part is, They will see me and honestly sometimes come up and give me a hug. If my wife were here, she would affirm the same thing. And they say, thank you for doing this. God bless you. And we have.
Well, then you're both going to jail. We can't have that. All right,
Shut the whole thing down. Huh?
Let's take a telephone call here. 505-7851 800-730-2727. Hi, Jan. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck.
Good morning.
Hi, Pastor.
Hi, Jim.
And are we discussing using public funds to advance the kingdom?
I don't know. Are we?
That's what I'm hearing. And I'm thinking that either we trust God to provide what we need in the temporal realm, or we prepare to somehow muffle what we're accomplishing for his kingdom.
Take that a step further. Explain it just a little bit more. Because I can't figure out
which side of the fence you're on there, Jan.
Well, I'm on the side of the fence that says, if I am in God's will, then he will give me what I need to accomplish what he wants. And I'm saying this as a public servant in the temporal realm.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't have it both ways. That's why the scripture tells us that God's word is a two-edged sword. It's not a steak knife.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So
are you in favor of monitoring the Salvation Army up there in New York, Jan?
I am in favor of the Salvation Army in New York being prepared to be monitored and losing their funding when it is discovered that, yes, they are advancing the kingdom. See, what we are uncomfortable with as Christians in the world is using the world's money to accomplish what we have as a mandate from God.
All right, let's
I think I'm catching on to what you're saying.
Thanks
Chuck,
for the call, Jan.
I, Thank you is right. I appreciate that very much. Let me start out with an analogy or an illustration from our situation. We buy food from a Michigan based, I mean it's kind of like a social service agency in Michigan. We buy food from that at a wonderful reduced rate, and then we are able to provide meals for people. So I can't do that as a citizen, but we can do that as a church. My brother pastor went down, interviewed, and all that kind of stuff. We've got that. So we've got that arrangement. In a sense, the state of Michigan is subsidizing the food that we get in order to give out to people. Now, I guess, and this is where I was coming from, if that creates the conditions that no, you can't do what you're doing, then I will have a problem with that, because there are other agencies as well doing something similar, promoting their own viewpoint, doing something like, but we would not be in a position to buy that food from them if they said you cannot share your faith in any context whatsoever, and we will have somebody from the state of Michigan there on board, on site, to monitor you every time you have that food pantry open. Well, I know we would opt out of that. I don't know what we would do at this particular time, but we would say that is we cannot do that. I mean, it's part of our mission. Now, for the state of New York, and I don't know all the details, but I'll try real quick here. If it is the case that the Salvation Army is being funded to do these kinds of basic things, and there are dedicated Christians who are employees of the Salvation Army who want to continue that mission of providing for basic needs and also sharing the love of Christ, I think that's part and parcel of who they are. That's their mission. And if the did I lose you?
No, you're there. You're good.
Okay. All right. That is part of their mission, and I can guarantee you that there are other agencies doing something similar that are working from a very different perspective from the Salvation Army. So I don't know if that helps or if it confuses, Chuck.
Well, I wish we had a little bit more time here, down to a minute, and I too am sensitive to public money being used to proselytize.
Right.
But
we're not getting state aid to carry on our word and sacrament ministry up here. You know that.
As apparently the Salvation Army is. However, somebody on the other side of the argument would say, are you getting a tax break, Pastor? Does your church pay taxes? And I'm assuming the answer is no.
Is no.
And so they would say that is state aid. And then what we need is another hour, because we're out of time.
Yeah, that's true.
I appreciate the conversation.
Hey, as always, a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
That's Pastor Ken Wagner. And I guess we'll leave that one a little bit undone here for today. But that's all right. We can take it up again another time. Pastor Ken Wagner, St. Peter Lutheran Church in Macomb, Michigan, for our Ask the Pastor conversation tomorrow. We will go to the end of Acts chapter 2. With Pastor Kirk Clayton of Zion Lutheran Church in Muskoda, and Pastor Larry Troxell will be our guest. He is retired from Our Redeemer Lutheran Church in Quincy, Illinois. He'll be our Ask the Pastor guest on Friday. Thanks for the calls.
Listen to Chuck Rather and guests Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the Internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.